knew about the free field theory, which hopefully you don't know. But. And this is based on a recent paper we put out with Mike Douglas and Luca Mazzucato and on some work in progress. So let me start with the statement of motivations and what is the goal, what is the goal of this work, what I will try to claim. So the motivation is to derive ADS-CFT, at least in a simple example. So in the last 10 years, we have seen many examples of ADS-CFT correspondence, and we understand this correspondence very well. There are numerous non-trivial checks of this duality of this correspondence. But in no concrete example, there is a detailed derivation of this duality. We don't have yet a first principle derivation of ADS-CFT duality in these cases which were discussed in the last 10 years. And not that there were no attempts to perform such a derivation. Actually, there were many attempts, and here I just list two attempts. So one can, for instance, start from field theory and try to see how string theory emerges in this field theory description. So there is this program initiated by Rajesh Gopakumar, and in this program, one basically starts from this observation by Hooft that gauge theories in large n limits look like string theories. One can look on the perturbative expansion of a gauge theory, and it is given as a sum over Riemann surfaces, which is kind of a string theory language of looking at things. And one can make this observation precise. So by now, this program has not, doesn't give us a full derivation of string theory, but it is a way to try to derive a string theory from field theory. On the other hand, there is this also recent program initiated by Nathan Berkowitz to start from string theory and to try to derive the field theory. So in general, this ADS-CFT correspondence is a strong weak type of duality. So on one side of duality, when we understand well the theory, we don't understand it well. On the other side, for instance, when we understand well the ADS part of the duality, the ADS side of the duality is when it reduces to a gravity, to a theory of gravity. On the other hand, the CFT on the other side is strongly coupled. And Berkowitz has a way to take the other limit, to take the ADS. He can formulate the sigma model on the ADS background, and take the small radius limit. In the small radius limit, the string theory, the gravity becomes actually a string theory. And he tries to see how the CFT can emerge from the description of the theory. And again, this is a way to try to derive the theory, but it doesn't. We still don't understand how the field theory emerges from string theory in this approach. And there are many other approaches. So today I will try to follow a different route. I will try to make use of this very well-established law of string theory. That goes as following. So the field theory side of this duality lives in D dimensions. And the dual, the holographic dual, lives in D plus one dimension. And the usual law of string theory says that this plus one, this extra dimension, should be related somehow to the energy scale of the field theory. And this observation has been made more precise in this program of holographic renormalization, where near the boundary of ADS, you basically identify the radial direction with the inverse scale of the field theory. Okay, so our claim today will be that in a very particular example of a free field theory, this observation can be made precise. One can exactly identify the radial direction of the ADS space with the inverse scaling inverse scale of the field theory. And by just looking on the RG equations of the field theory, derive the bulk description of the theory. Okay. The bulk equations of motion, we'll claim for this theory, are essentially the RG equations. Okay, so these are our motivations and goals. So the outline of my talk will be as following. I will start from some general comments on free field theory and on what we expect the holographic dual of a free field theory to be. and on some very general things and some general comments on holography and RG. Then we will write down exact RG equations for in general and for the free field theory specifically. Then we will try to interpret these RG equations as bulk equations of motion, as equations of motion in ADS background. Finally, I will have some comments how one can interpret correlators computing using this dictionary of going from RG to bulk equations of motion. Okay? So let me start from general comments about free field theory. So what is a free field theory? So free field theory is given by this simple, we will discuss free field theories of complex scalars, but one can generalize this discussion to any free theory essentially. So concretely we will discuss this kind of actions, which we all know and love, and we will have, well, at least for the sake of this slide, we will have n copies of our scalar field, and this scalar is a vector, okay? So we have a vector theory. So the usual law of holographic duality states that if we have our CFT, then we should look on single trace operators in this CFT. And this single and certain class of these single trace operators should have a dual description in the bulk of ADS. There should be fields propagating in the ADS spacetime which are dual to this single trace operator. So what is the natural analog of a single trace operator in this theory? And well, in usual Young-Mills theory, the single trace operators, like if you have a field in the adjoint representation, then you can have, like, if X is your field in the adjoint representation, the single trace operators are traces of these fields with arbitrary powers here. But because this theory is a vector theory, then kind of the only natural objects with a single trace interpretation are quadratic combinations in the field. Okay, because you can contract these color indices if you wish only once, and then you can act with bunches of derivatives on this on these two fields. And certain classes of well, this there are a lot of such operators, and they have different spins. And a certain class of such operators are the primaries, and the others are basically obtained from them by derivative. And these primary operators, we expect them to have dual description in the ADS spacetime as higher spin fields. So these primary fields are conserved currents on the boundary, so we expect that these conserved currents will be dual to gauge fields in the bulk. So this conjecture was put forward by several various authors, by Sundborg, Sesgin, and Sundel, and by Klebanov-Polyakov, where Klebanov-Polyakov also extended this conjecture for free theory. They extended it to the critical ON model by saying that actually one can describe by the same gravity theory which describes the free theory, one can describe also the interacting bulk theory with a small change that the boundary condition on a certain field are varying. But at this during this talk, I will have nothing to say about the critical ON model. I only will talk about the free theory. And such theories, gravity theories in ADS space-time with higher spin gauge fields, interacting such theories, were discussed for some time by Vasiliev and collaborators. There is a lot of literature on this subject. And so very recently, about a year ago, Simone Giombi and Cien made a very impressive check of this duality. They basically computed all the three-point functions in this Vasiliev theory. Of these currents, of this, well, of the fields dual to these conserved currents, and match them to the free theory result. So on the free field theory side, this is quite a trivial computation, but on the gauge theory, in this Vasiliev theory, this is quite an involved computation. But nevertheless, the two results completely agree. Okay, so last thing I want to say about this duality is that the dual side, the theory living in ADS, is not a string theory. And one way to see it, well, at least it is not naively a string theory. So one way to see it is that this field theory, the correlators of such operators in free theory, don't have a non-trivial large N expansion. All the diagrams contributing to correlators of such fields are basically circle diagrams. So you insert these operators, and you have phi and phi bar, and you contract them in this way. So each diagram scales as n. So So there is no non-trivial large N expansion. So this gravity theory, this higher spin gravity theory by Vasiliev, should be the full description of the boundary theory. Okay, so let me now say a couple of comments about the about holography in general and RG and why one can think that they should be related. So what do we have in holography? Again, we can define we can start from some CFT given by this S0 on the boundary. We can turn on certain operators given by this OI here and couple them to sources given by phi I here. And then the holographic dictionary says that these sources phi I become become phi bulk fields, capital phi I here, and these sources on the boundary are basically give the boundary conditions for these bulk fields. These bulk fields propagate according to certain equations of motion in ADS. This equation of motion can be sometimes derived from an action principle. And then the statement is that the on-shell action, on-shell bulk action, plus certainly chosen boundary terms, is exactly equivalent to a free energy of the field theory evaluated when you turn on these sources. So what is the statement of RG? The statement of RG is quite similar. You again start from some CFT, from some fixed point. Then you can turn on a bunch of couplings. So here usually you call these things sources, here couplings. Couplings for any operator in your theory. Then you can integrate out degrees of freedom above certain scale and demand that the physics described by the action with integrated out degrees of freedom is the same as the original action. Then this demand will imply certain equations for this coupling. It will imply that these couplings will depend on a scale lambda. So again, as here in ADS we get these sources become dependent on one extra coordinate. Here these couplings become dependent on extra parameter, this scale. So it's very tempting to identify this. This parameter R, we say the inverse scale of RG, 1 over lambda. So usually we don't expect this to be, this to be true. For instance, the RG flow will generate any kind of couplings in the Lagrangian. For instance, it will generate multi-trace operators in the effective action, something which we don't want to have in this, at least in holography, which involves only gravity. Okay, so in a sense, if it will work for any theory, this the RG equation, this identification, I mean, if the identification between RG equations and the holographic equations will work, in general theories, one might expect that the RG equations won't give you just the gravity, but the whole string theory, or string field theory, whatever it is. So, but we will try to claim that in the simple example of free field theory, this is a sensible identification that RG equations are basically equations of motion in ADS space time following this holographic dictionary. Okay, and the last comment I want to make is what happens to the gauge symmetries in the bulk. So I told you that these conserved currents on the boundary are dual to gauge fields in the bulk, and gauge symmetry in the bulk implies that there is a huge redundancy of the definition of the bulk theory. You have to fix a gauge, but you don't see this gauge symmetry basically on the boundary. So anything you will derive from the boundary theory, like by direct reformulation of the boundary theory, say we will obtain equations of motion. We will obtain these RG equations and interpret them as equations of motion in the bulk. They will be in a gauge fixed form in some way. Okay, and then we will have to see how this gauge freedom can be recovered from the description that we'll get. Okay, so let me start doing a bit more concrete things. So first of all, let me review what the RG equations are. So here is we will use a particular approach to derive the RG equation, the Polchinski equation. So in RG, you start by considering such a partition function of general field theory where you have a kinetic term and something you will call an interacting term, although in our case, it won't be really an interaction. And the kinetic term, well, it is this usual term, and then you multiply it by a certain function k. And this function k implements a cutoff on your degrees of freedom, so it smoothly interpolates between zero, between 1 and 0, and, well, roughly where it changes behavior is the scale lambda, and it is such that the propagator, which is given by k, t squared over lambda squared over p squared, is equal to 1 over p squared in IR, and is equal to 0 in UV. So you basically integrate out highly fluctuating degrees of freedom. And when you do so, you obtain a partition function, which in principle depends on lambda, but you want to demand that the physics described by this effective action after you integrated out some degrees of freedom is the same. And this demand translates into the fact that you want your partition function not to depend on the scale lambda. Now, the only thing in the action in this definition which might depend on lambda and you did not fix is this interaction action. You postulate that kinematic term has this that the kinetic term has this dependence on lambda, and then this equation gives you this simple equation for the effective action, which is called the Polchinski equation. Now, this equation is non-perturbative, but it has a very simple perturbative meaning. So one can understand each term in this equation. So for instance, if one has a theory and this theory has cubic couplings, one can look on diagrams which have this form, and or stub diagrams of bigger diagrams which have this form, and one can integrate higher momentum modes of this propagator and then obtain the quartic interaction. This is basically the first term. And one also can have such things. Say we have a six-tick vertex, and we integrate out such a loop. Again, we obtain a quartic vertex. So the moment we have an interacting theory, we have at least cubic vertices, then the RG flow will generate any other vertices. It will generate any other irrelevant couplings, any other higher degree couplings in the theory by this mechanism. So this increases the order of coupling. This decreases, so you have you generate higher point interactions, and then higher point interaction can fire back at you through this term. Okay? So in general, RG equations are equations for an infinite set of couplings. Are equations for all the possible couplings you can turn on in your field theory. So now let us write these equations for the free theory. And the free theory is free, and so it's a very simple theory. And the equations simplify accordingly, but they are not completely trivial. So the kind of interaction action we turn on has this form. So it is quadratic in the fields. So this is in momentum space. And we have this general kernel B of P and Q, and the field-independent term, which we call F. So why do we turn on such a term? And again, this just follows from our holographic intentions. This term, when you expand it in, say, when you move back to position space, you can write this term as sum over couplings coupled to these higher spin currents and so on. So these are just all the single trace. This term generates all the single trace operators we can have. And this is there for the sake of completeness of the equations. So when we plug in these ansatz for the interacting action into the RG equation, we get two equations for this, let's call it field B and this field F. So the equation for field B has this simple form. It doesn't include F. Basically, it comes from the only form from the first term in the Polchinski equation, which has this diagrammatic intuition. In this field theory, in the free field theory, only vertices we have are of this form, so you can integrate out the propagator and you still will have the same vertex. So this like the equation of motion, the equation, the RG equation for B closes on B, so it's an equation only for B. And then we have an equation for the field independent term in the action. And when you compute it carefully, it has this kind of form, and it comes from this type of term in the RG equation, basically, where you have a loop and you integrate it out, and it gives you field independent term. Okay, so the P here is just the kinetic term in the action, and this alpha is the derivative of the propagator. And we will use it throughout this talk. The alpha, you should remember that the alpha is basically the derivative of the kinetic term according to the scale lambda. Now, the last thing I want to say here is what is this field F? So what we will do in what follows, we will interpret this equation. And in particular, we will interpret this guy B as a bulk field generating all the higher spin fields in the bulk. And this F is related to the free energy of the theory. So if we integrate out all the modes, if we send the cutoff to zero, not the cutoff, the scale to zero, then what we are left with is only this this field-independent term, and this is by definition the free energy of the theory. And well, using this equation, we can derive an explicit expression for this free energy, and it is given by this integral. Okay, we can drop this this B-independent term. We can just swallow it by definition of normalization of the partition function. So this is kind of an explicit expression for the free energy using this language. One can plug in the equation of motion, the RG equation for B, and obtain the usual one can show explicitly that this expression is equivalent to the usual expression you might guess to have here for this field theory. Since it's free, then the partition function, you can explicitly evaluate the partition function if it is given by this trace log of this kernel. But when we'll discuss correlators, I will come back to this expression of this of the free energy. Okay? Any questions?
Phi.
Sorry?
You have a single field phi, single free field.
Yes. I
forgot to mention it. Before that, we had the n copies of the field phi A, but as I mentioned before, there is no non-trivial large N expansion here, and you can just take a single field N. And for instance, the only effect the N will have is just multiplying this free energy by a constant factor. All the rest is not affected by this by choosing one or two or N fields. There is no room here for large N effects. There is no need for the to take many fields. And of course, this becomes different when one might consider interacting theories, say interacting O-N model. There is already a large N expansion, and things become more complicated. But for the sake of free theory, there is no need to take many fields. One field gives you everything.
Does not imply that there is an AGS tool.
No.
Let me also ask, why are you not considering higher spin fields where you have several phis and several derivatives on?
Well, several phis will generate in this AGS CFT law, they will correspond to multi-trace operators.
And we don't expect these things to be dual to single particle states in the AGS, to fields in the AGS. Again? Oh, if it's not a vector? Oh, right. So I use this large N motivation. Well, I'm just reusing it to motivate this construction. But this there is no effect to this N except to motivate to look on only object of this type. Yeah. Okay. So what we'll do in what follows is just look on this equation on this equation and try to rewrite it as an equation of motion in ABS space-time, and to see where the ABS hides in this this expression point.
Classical.
Yes, the bulk dual of this free field theory is a classical theory. There is no quantum correction. That's a free theory.
Okay, let me comment a bit more.
What does it mean
that it doesn't have corrections in there?
Can I ask a question? Usually in free theory, we don't expect high energy motor, fast motor, and slow motor. We don't expect them to get mixed.
Well, to mix them
by turning on this this kind of a general current, right? So it mixes all the modes. There is no translation symmetry the moment you turn on this this term. Yes. Sure. Right.
It's not irreversible.
Well, it is reversible.
Once you write this equation, it's
but it is reversible. When you write it in this form, right? Because you keep on you keep all the irrelevant operators. You get you keep track of them. We can reverse this equation.
So you are not integrating out.
Well, you are integrating out, but you are trading that integrating integration out by turning on the irrelevant part.
Can I follow up on Sensei's question? What is the theory you're defining then? I mean, this is now a non-local theory.
It's just what you do in holography, right? You have an action, which is a free action, which is only a kinetic term, and this is just the sources for conserved currents on the boundary. Just the generic source, like the operator, the operators you want to source are quadratic combinations of the fields with any arbitrary derivative. Okay, and maybe that's the non-locality you refer to. You can turn any derivative, any number of derivatives. Your operators, the single trace operators, have any numbers of derivatives, and you can couple them, all these operators, to some sources, and you can package this thing in this compact expression like this, and which is looks non-local because you have arbitrary number of derivatives acting on this.
Non-local. The higher derivatives or the higher spin operators that you wrote down, I didn't see them breaking translation invariants. But
if you turn on an arbitrary source for those operators, that in general breaks the non-constant source that will break translation invariants. If you couple an operator with some.
So you're saying something
like that, this you choose arbitrarily, and in particular it breaks translation.
So you would have coupling with any number of derivatives.
Right.
This would expect this to be true also if you turn on a small coupling.
Well, yes.
Why is this description useful for local?
Well, okay, so
as I said in the beginning, I will only discuss the free theory. The things in the interacting theory are much more interacting and are much more complicated. So I won't talk today about this. But again, one should keep in mind that at least for the critical ON model, in the large N limit, one should expect that the same derivation will go through, at least there. But I won't talk about it.
We can map any Hilbert space to any Hilbert space.
Right, so what will happen what will happen for the interacting field theories? For the interacting theories, you have this kind of equations. And when you will turn small interaction, you will turn an infinite number of couplings. What you will get is not these two simple equations, but an infinite set of equations. The moment you turn on arbitrary small interaction, the whole system of equations becomes infinitely more complicated.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know how to say something intelligent about that system.
Map it to something else.
Why to map this thing to dynamics in ABS? Well, I want to derive an ABS description of it. I want to derive a holographic dual of this theory which has a meaning of fields propagating in idea space time. Local.
If you have interaction with any number of derivatives.
Well, okay. I agree that it looks local, but any time you have.
Only if you have a specific term.
Well, this again, we are in this context of higher spin theories. This free theory has this conserved occurrence of arbitrary spin. Mm-hmm. So by the usual holographic law, you do expect fields of arbitrary spin in the bulk, and in a sense, whether it is local or non-local, it's a question of taste. What we will do, we will write the equations which look local, but I agree. The moment you have arbitrary spin, but that's the conjecture. That's what we expect from this theory. And in the end, that's what we're attracting. Okay.
So again, what we'll try to do in what follows is just to focus on this equation and to rewrite it as an equation of motion of fields propagating in ABS space time. Okay, so we will just massage that equation. And the first step in the massage is to expand this field depending on P and Q in these dimensionless combinations of the momenta in P over lambda and Q over lambda. And then we will have these expansion coefficients which have many indices, two types of indices, the ones coupled to P and the ones coupled to Q. And we will have this shorthand notation for this expansion. So whenever we have an underlined index, what we mean is that we have a bunch of indices, like here we have S indices and P indices, and they are contracted with SPs and TQs. Okay? And then we also define this kind of a generalized matrix alpha, which is just given by this integral, by this moments of integrals over this derivative of the propagator alpha. When we do so, then we can write this Polchinski equation for this B field in this very simple form, which has a matrix, kind of a matrix form. So what we will have here, something which we can call field B, which has a bunch of indices. It depends on the scale lambda. It has this non-trivial interaction, and it has this linear term. The linear term comes from the expansion of B in the powers of P over lambda and Q over lambda. And what we will see in what follows, that this is where the ADS comes from the linear term. This will be related to kind of a rescaling symmetry of ADS. We'll make it more complete in a couple of slides. Now, this is a single equation of motion, And we like to interpret it as an equation of motion in ADS. So the natural thing to do is to interpret this as a radial equation of motion. So the question now is, where are all the rest of the coordinates? In ADS D plus 1, we should have D plus 1 equations of motion if we have first order equations of motion like we have here. So where are the rest of the equations? So now what we can do is to do something which looks quite trivial. We can, for instance, look on this interaction action that we had in position space and just shift all the dependencies on the position. So B tilde is just a Fourier transform of the field B we had in momentum space by a constant vector A in this D dimensions. Of course, this doesn't change this integral, but this implies kind of a trivial equation for B as depending on this parameter A, because it's just a statement that a shift when you Fourier transform is multiplication by this momenta P. So what we'll do now is to interpret, we will claim that this identification is a natural identification of as an equation of motion in additional d directions, and one can motivate it. One can make this much less trivial by noting the following fact. So what we do in RG is we make a cutoff. We integrate out degrees of freedom. This procedure has a dual picture in position space. In position space, you put your theory on some grid with the constant spacing, say, call it B, which is roughly related to, roughly given by 1 over lambda. But one can consider much more complicated situation. One can put your theory on a grid of varying size, varying size. One can make this size depend on the position, and exactly that position we will call A. So this linear term basically tells us what we mean by these shifts. This coordinate A is just a constant shift of a reference point on your field theory. But then you can discuss more complicated situations like that. You can derive Polchinski equation. You can demand that you turn on a cutoff function, which is dependent not only on scale lambda, but also on this constant shift A. And then you can demand that your partition function doesn't depend on this shift A. And basically, the whole derivation of Polchinski equation goes through. And what you get is this non-trivial interaction term, if you wish, for these equations of motion, which now has an index, some index, L. Okay. And now what we will try to do, what we claim that these equations are really equations of motion in ADS for these higher spin fields B of S and T. And I call them higher spin because they have many indices. And the way we will make this identification between ADS and this equation by postulating that the radial direction of ADS is basically given by 1 over lambda. Yes? Arbitrary sources for the single trace operator.
So I can understand, you know, sort of the first one, but the second one sort of requires that my theory is translationally invariant in the presence of sources.
It's not really, the disco coordinate A is just a statement that when you shift all the coordinates by a constant vector A, the action doesn't change. I mean, I don't know. This is just, if you wish this equation, if you don't like this motivation to postulate this equation, this is a kind of a definition what we mean by A, which we can turn on a dependence of this field B on some extra D coordinates, and we postulate that it depends on this coordinate in this way. Yeah. And I mean, this is just, you know, you turn on if you make such shifts
in your action, the action doesn't depend on this shift because you integrate over everything. I mean, this is, it's true that you don't have translational invariance, but you can make such a very formal argument. To just the important point is just to define the name.
I can think of this as different Archite directions.
Exactly.
So you derive a function.
Exactly. You can write you can think it even more abstractly. As you say, you just postulate that your cutoff function k depends
on extra parameters, and then these extra parameters are this. What we mean by these extra parameters, if we don't turn on the sources, we mean by these extra parameters just shifts, constant shifts. And if you turn on this function k, then it will generate such an interaction.
Saying it, I don't understand the first way of saying it. No, the one with translation symmetry. Because if you look at the previous transparency, if you don't mind,
I think I agree with you.
The way you define D on the first line has no knowledge at all about the translation argument.
Well, again, what you can do is
make this kind of identification and Fourier transform only the X. And then what you will have in momentum space is this B multiplied by e to the I pi A, e to the minus I q A, or something like that. And this equation just is the statement that what you get. You don't Fourier transform A. If you wish, you introduce a parameter A and don't Fourier transform it. You only Fourier transform the X. Right.
Just Fourier transform the action, then A is nothing.
Anywhere you want to say, this is a motivation how one...
Again, one gets from RG equation a single equation. One has to find the additional equation. And this is just a way to naturally postulate the additional equation. Yes.
I hate to buy it. If I look at that action, there's an integral over X, there's an integral over X prime, there's some, you know, apparently arbitrary kernel. So in what sense is this local?
But it is not local.
Okay. Is there something in the boundary conditions or something?
This is a boundary theory.
Is there no boundary conditions of your RG flow that says that I'm going to get something that looks local in the UV? Or, you know, there must be, you didn't... you didn't just write down, those operators look local.
No, they don't look local. Let me write them in another way. Well, so we can write this V thing in the following way. We have these fields phi acting with, and we have bunches of derivative acting on them. Then we turn on arbitrary sources for these fields. We call it B, nu1, nu s, nu1, nu s, nu t of x. So at this level, everything looks local. But now when you Fourier transform it, the Fourier transform of it becomes something like B of minus P, very lovely, minus Q times bunch of P to the power S, Q to the power T, phi of P, phi bar of Q. And this thing, now, it's a complicated thing. Well, you have this this indices floating around, and you...
By Fourier transform that, I could have written the whole thing in terms of a single momentum, right?
That's right.
But you're doing something else.
You are saying that your question is, why do we need two momenta or one momenta? Okay, this question is a very good question. We are not sure why you need two momenta, and you cannot do without a one. It might be that you can, but the formulation, you agree that that thing, these two things are basically equivalent, right? Yeah. Even a generic function of D, of P and Q, you can write it in this form.
No, but I think
maybe with some constraints, and I don't know what constraints.
Yeah, I think you're doing something more general. I'm wondering what those constraints are. Is it?
Well, one constraint, for instance, is that you can make such expansion. I mean, for a generic function of P and Q, you cannot make such an expansion. For instance, if you have a mass term, with mass term is a delta function, you cannot make such an expansion. You have to expand a delta function in a Taylor series like this, which you cannot do. So, for instance, a mass term will be problematic in what I'm saying. But anyway,
make the most minimal statement. If you turn on these kind of sources, you can write it as B of P and Q with certain constraints of B, and then what I'm doing is just doing the proof here. What are exactly constraints, how you postulate constraints on B such that you only will get such expressions? I don't know. And the question whether you need two momenta or one momenta is a question which we don't have a good answer on. And it will relate to something much more obscure in a couple of slides. Well, there is one space-time, right? So there is one coordinate x, one t. Yeah, that's right. There are derivative, like there are derivative acting on phi and derivative acting on phi bar, but still one might hope, why do you have to introduce these two types of momenta instead of one moment.
So that's right. From this building up of things, it is a completely natural thing to do. But still, the question. Maybe in a couple of slides, I will comment more on this two moment, one moment.
Okay. So again, so from now on, we will just try to make these equations look more similar to what people discuss in the usual literature on higher spin field theory, gravity.
The theory in the algebra, it's clear that you can rewrite it back and only return with the same line, just line.
Yeah, sure, because these are the operators.
So I think with two momenta, you are not looking at that kind of deformation. You are looking at deformation where B depends both on X and Y, where some phi depends on X, some phi depends on Y. So it's completely non-operative.
Well, but I think, let's say, in this kind of thing, can write as a kernel of BX and Y times phi of X, phi of Y.
So you have B of Q and T, which depends on T intersect with T.
But what I'm saying is that this thing can be written as B of X and Y integrated over phi of X.
Sure, this is more general.
No, this is not, I mean, this is a more general statement, but this you can write as this. So let me just at the moment say this minimal statement, that I'm just rewriting all I'm doing in such a form. And what are the constraints on this B such that you only have such things? I don't know. I think maybe one can figure that out.
But you need B, which depends on T and Q separately to close the
relationship. Right, but you have here quite generic dependence on T and Q here, right? Because you can, well, you have bunches of spins here. I don't really see what the constraints will be. You see, because here you have some function of T plus Q, and then you multiply it by an arbitrary, basically. You choose these spin structures in an arbitrary way, and then you make this transform. I don't really see what the constraints will be. If I give you a B of P and Q, I have to think of it, but it might be that you always can write it in this way under very minor assumption. Because you see, you have what you have here, it's like you have a generic function of B of Q and Q. You can think of it in the following way. You start from a generic function of P and Q, you Fourier Taylor expand this in P and Q, obtain such a thing, and then you turn on additional dependence on P and Q.
Yeah, but it cannot be true because of the, one is a single integral.
It's a single integral with two types of derivatives acting on a different field.
But let me ask it slightly different. Is that really important to you? So you have a free theory, and I think probably some people would be, and I would be happy if you would say that you have a free theory, but in this free theory you turn on a non-local source. Is that a big issue to you? I mean, because if you say that, then then on the boundary I have B of X, Y, it's arbitrary non-local, and so everything that you said.
That's basically what I can say that, and that's what I'm basically doing, but I just want to follow the usual law of ADS-CFT, so that is not what you usually do. Maybe there is a more general story to what I'm saying, but it isn't important to me whether you call it non-local source.
Because it's hard to interpret, whatever you are doing in the context of a quantum field theory with only local sources being turned on. I mean, no matter what kind of arguments you give, it's
hard. Anyway.
But you, so it's not important.
It's not important.
Okay.
Can you elaborate what is the line of thought that you think of deriving against it?
Well, I'm just writing these RG equations to be equations of motion in a DS space time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but without locality.
But again, this is a very usual, if you have an infinite number of conserved currents on the boundary, you will have an infinite number, and they have an arbitrary spin.
You will have, by usual ADS-CFT correspondence, arbitrary gauge fields with arbitrary spins in the bulk. And then, in some sense, it will be a non-local theory, but it will be given in a very local language. I mean, it's a very special instance of ADS-CFT duality. Okay. This OM or this pre-OM model Vasiliev theory duality. Again, this is, for instance, not a string theory. This is completely classical. So
easier to compute using the bulk and not the boundary field.
What is it?
Would there be some observable that are easier?
No, I don't think so. The dual theory is a free theory. I hardly can think you can beat that.
No, I'm talking about the generalization.
Generalization, I don't know what how you really generalize we are thinking about it, but at least we try to understand this simple case.
This is my question. How do you...
I don't know how you can exactly generalize. Any generalization looks very complicated, but it might be.
And one more question. If your B was fully non-local, X and Y, would you still have the equation, the derivative of A equation?
What bothers you?
Yeah,
you can do A and B.
It would be A and B.
Yeah, you can have shift another Y coordinate.
So let me stick to this minimal statement. I'm here and I'm doing this thing, and then if you wish, one might think what the constraints are, that it always reduces to this. And I think there are not many constraints, but we can discuss it. And again, we did think about this issue why you have two momenta and not one, and we don't have an answer to that. And again, in a couple of slides, or maybe the next slide, this will appear again. So what we'll do now, we'll just rewrite these equations in a language which is much more familiar to higher spin people, to people who are doing higher spin gravity. And the way they are thinking about these equations is by introducing auxiliary non-commutative variables. So the way one can motivate this, these equations are kind of matrix equations. So we have this like contractions of indices, but these are not really matrix equations because the matrices are of arbitrary size. So when you have such a contraction, you sum over all possible sizes, over all possible values of T, and all possible assignments of the index T. And actually, one can write down such multiplications using the non-commutative variables. So what one does is introduces four copies of non-commutative variables, oscillators, which we'll call y, y bar, z, and z bar. And these indices here will take now d plus 2 values. So the d values which we'll have on the boundary, plus the radial direction, plus an additional direction, which we'll call bullet. And the star product is a simple generalization of the usual Moyal product. So when you multiply on the left with y, it is equal to the usual multiplication, and then some derivatives with respect to y bar and z bar, and so on. So for instance, the commutation relations are given by y bar with y is equal to this simple metric, and z bar with z is equal to minus the same thing. And if you wish, you can think of this as two copies of x and p. Okay, so let's say y bar is x, p is y is p, and vice versa for z bar and z. Okay, so this is another manifestation of having these two x's and two p's. And the nice thing about this Moyal product is that it has one can combine these oscillators in certain way and define this function of these oscillators, which we call h here. And one can look on these functions of these oscillators. And when one multiplies this action, they basically mean that you contract z with the star product basically means that you contract z with z bar, y and y bar. And you get the same thing, the same type of thing which you started with. And then you can define this, you can trade this matrix elements, B of S and T, with these functions of these oscillators, YZ, Y bar, Z bar, and to do the same with alpha. So this kind of, you just dress these matrix elements appropriately with factors of these capital Ys and Zs. And this part of the dressing, it just assures to you that this matrix multiplication is just given by this Moyal product. And this part of the multiplication, which includes this additional indices, will generate the linear terms in the equation of motions. Okay, so to generate the linear terms and to see where the ideas comes from, one can note the following thing about this oscillator algebra. This oscillator algebra can generate a very simple representation of the group SOD minus 1, 2. You just look on any quadratic combinations of these oscillators, of Bard and non-Bard oscillator. And then if you look, for instance, the dilatation operator is given by this kind of combination, and the translation is given by this kind of operator. And if you compute the star product commutation relation, it simply gives you the usual algebra of SOD minus 1, 2. Then you can define a connection, something you can call a connection using this definition of the algebra. You just divide these generators by the radial direction R. Just following from this commutation relation, this connection is free. And there is this usual way, the simple way to write gravity theories as gauge theories, where you talk in the language of frames and spin connections, and one can read off from this connection W0, the frame and the spin connection. The frame is the stuff which is proportional to the bulleted coordinates, and that's why you need to introduce them. You need to introduce them to be able to describe the frame and the spin and the Lorentz spin connection on the same footing. And the stuff which doesn't have bullets describes the Lorentz spin connection.
And you can read off the frame and the spin connection from this definition of W, and it describes to you the ADS space-time in Poincaré patch. It is just a kind of a kinematic way to describe ADS. There is nothing magical to it. However, if we choose the dressing to dress these fields, this matrix elements with this particular product of these oscillators, then the linear term in the RG equation, like I drop here the interacting term, are basically given by this very simple equation, which has a very simple interpretation. It is a propagation of this field B, which now depends on these extra oscillators, in an ADS background. It's just a covariant constancy condition of this B in an ADS background. It's again, it's a small game to play. The linear term are just rescaling and shifts. So this W0, that's what it generates. It regenerates rescaling and shifts. There is some subtlety here. So if you write this, if you expand this equation in the oscillators, you get this equation, but you get also extra equations, which are equations for the bulleted and dark components of B. You don't see these equations on the boundary because you don't have bulleted and dark components on the boundary. There is no meaning for those components. I mean, the indices, these indices have only D values, but they are dual to bulk fields which have D plus 1 values. They have also the radial direction, and this bullet direction is an extra auxiliary direction to package things compactly. But the claim is that you can always get rid of these extra components and only, well, that they don't affect the equations of motion of the unbulleted and unarred components, and you can get back to this equation. So the statement is that the linear part of the equation can be packaged in very compact way like this as the covariant constancy condition. Okay, so that is where the ADS is hidden. It is hidden just by, you just postulate that you rescale and shift your fields. And when, like, that you have a non-trivial RG transformations which are generated by integrating out some things, and there are trivial RG transformations that are generated by rescalings and by shifts, and these are given by these linear terms, and they give you the ADS background. Okay? So now we can look on our RG equations and interpret the full RG equations as a covariant constancy condition on this field B. We just postulate that we have a fluctuating part of the connection, which we define just by contraction of B with alpha. This is the left connection, and the right connection doesn't have a fluctuating part. And then the whole RG equation has this form, okay, the covariant constancy form, where now W is W0 we had plus this fluctuating part. Now we can act on this equation with a derivative, right, multiplied by alpha, and derive an equation solely for W. And under this assumption, under a certain assumption on this cutoff function alpha, on this derivative of the momentum function, which takes this form, this connection is flat. And for the choice we made in the beginning for the position-independent momentum cutoff for this constant grid, this is automatically satisfied. And if you wish, if you turn on a more complicated prescription to do RG, to make it a flat connection, you will have to demand. This is a demand on this your external data alpha, which you postulate for your field. So now this thing has the equations of motion of RG. You can think of them as these two equations plus this identification between what you mean by fluctuating part of W and B. In this form, when you write the equations in this form, they have a very, very nice properties. For instance, they have this higher spin gauge symmetry. You just can make these usual transformations. So W transforms like a connection, and B as a bifundamental, if you wish. And these are symmetries of these two equations. However, these gauge symmetries are not a symmetry of this identification, delta or W equals B alpha. This identification breaks this gauge symmetry. And this has a very nice physical meaning. This identification involves a choice of a cutoff prescription of what you mean by integrating out alpha. And this choice basically imposes a certain gauge Well, among other things, it imposes other things. It imposes a certain gauge in which you see the bulk theory. Okay, so the logic is that you have these two equations which take a form of covariant constancy and the flatness condition, and then in certain gauge, maybe you have other equations which you don't see by this derivation of the equations, and in certain gauge, these maybe extra equations reduce to this kind of identification between the fluctuating part of the connection and this field B. Okay, and so now let me just comment also on the physical interpretation of these equations. So what is the ADS space-time again here? So we have this ADS, we have a boundary of ADS, we have the radial direction, and these coordinates, R and A, just parameterize the space of equivalent description of your boundary physics. They parameterize the choice of the cutoff and choice of this shift of this shift parameter A. So you can start from some description of the theory, and you can flow in ADS. You can follow these, say, fields W, mu, and B in ADS. But then you can, for instance, make closed loops in ADS space-time. So this, you start from some B here, you flow, you go back to the same point. So it would be nice that after forming closed loops in ADS, you will come to the same description of the physics, not to an equivalent, just an equivalent description, but to the same same description. And then this flatness condition you have on W, because W is the thing which generates this flow for B. This flatness condition is a very natural condition to have. So now how does all this relate to the usual formulation of higher spin gravities due to Vassiliev? And this is looks tantalizingly similar. So how Vassiliev formulates higher spin gravity? He again has these two fields, B and W, with W being a flat connection and B being covariantly constant with respect to this W. What he means by W tilde, by this right connection, is different from what we got from the RG. In our case, W tilde was not fluctuating. In his case, it is fluctuating, but it is related to W. So you only have one fluctuating connection. And structurally, it has the same form. And kind of an important and surprising thing is that this W and B are formulated in terms of the same kinematic data, the same two copies of oscillators. Okay? With the two copies of oscillators we got basically by having these P's and Q's, things acting on the left, things acting on the right, and things having lower and upper indices. That's the origin of these four copies of oscillators. And to write down interacting equations of motions of higher spin fields in ADS, Vassiliev also needs four copies of oscillators. So he has these two equations, which we have. But then to define a non-trivial dynamics, he has to introduce an additional field, which he called S, which satisfies certain equations, very roughly given by this equation. And one can philosophically think about these equations as implementing a constraint analogous to the constraint we had in RG. So one can solve this equation for S and obtain a certain relation between W and B. And one can do that in certain gauge. And for instance, one can hope that either our description of RG in a certain gauge is just a solution of this equation, so that our constraint, this constraint, is a solution of this type of equations in a certain gauge, or that will mean that the equations of motion we got are exactly equivalent to Vassiliev equations, or there might be an analogous system of equations which gives you the same, which gives you this constraint. Any questions?
Would you check that? Or
no. I'm not sure that these are okay. So finally, let me comment on how one can interpret the correlators in this RG story. And there is a very kind of neat interpretation of correlators. So how do you compute correlators in this in field theory? You compute the free energy with certain sources turned on, then you vary this free energy with respect to sources and set the sources to zero, and you obtain your correlator. But in the beginning, we had 10 slides
ago, we had a description of this free energy as an integral over this scale lambda, which had this form. And now we
have a nice identification of what B times alpha means. It is the fluctuating part of this connection. So if you wish, this free energy is given by a a line integral. So this is again your ADS. So the way you get it from the RG equation, the free energy is just given by the integral of this connection along a contour which goes from UV to d pi r. And because the connection is flat, you can now deform the connection is flat. You can deform this contour arbitrarily. In particular, you can think that it extends between two infinitely separated points on the boundary. And then in this ADS-CFT dictionary, this free energy is equal to the bulk action on shell. And not just the bulk action on shell, but also bulk action on shell plus the possible boundary terms you have to add to that bulk action. For instance, we don't know what is the action which generates this kind of equations. And also Vasilyev doesn't know in general case in his theory, like, what is the action principle which generates this kind of structure? It is not known, and we also don't know how to do it in our case. We don't know what the off-shell action is which generates the equations of motion, but we know what the on-shell action is, including all the boundary terms. And it has this very, very simple form. So now one can compute correlators just using in a holographic setup. It's a bit perverse thing to do because the field theory thing way to compute things is very simple, but one can do things in this holographic setting by just using, again, Witten diagrams and as one does usually, just evaluating this connection W in the bulk of ADS, solving the equations of motion using Witten diagrams, and then evaluating this contour integral. Okay. So this might be a nice question, whether in what, like in usual ADS CFT, in what cases you can think of the on-shell action being of such form, if at all there are other cases. Okay, so let me summarize and give some outlook. So what have we done? We have looked on the exact RG equations of a free field theory with arbitrary sources turned on. We have massaged those equations to look like equations for two fields propagating in ADS, a gauge field, this W, and some field we can call a scalar field, B. And the equations look like a flatness condition for W and the covariant constancy condition for the field B. And there is a constraint relating these two quantities. The equations of motion have a large gauge symmetry, but this constraint breaks this gauge symmetry. I forgot to say it, but kind of the very nice thing about the Vasilyev equations is that they are manifestly gauge invariant. So one can put them in a certain gauge, but when one writes them in this form, they are manifestly gauge invariant. So there are many questions one has to answer. So first of all, can one put this derivation in some gauge invariant form? Basically, probably that will mean introducing extra auxiliary degrees of freedom with extra equations of motion, which solution of which in some gauge will reduce to our constraint. Of course, there is the question of how to understand the critical Owen model in this case, which seems to be a doable exercise to perform, and the question of how this relates to Vasilyev theory, and of course, the question, does it, if at all, go beyond these vector models, this holographic derivation, this RG derivation.